Welcome, welcome to the first episode of Acquire the Fire, a burnout prevention podcast brought to you by My House. I'm super excited to host this podcast. It's such a privilege. And the heart of Acquire the Fire is to help people that work in social work in the SUD recovery field and also people that are interested in joining the field. We are growing out here in the Matsu Valley, and I'm super excited to introduce our first host of season one of Acquire the Fire.
Hi, Michelle Overstreet, founder and CEO at My House.
Awesome. Well, it's such a privilege to have you on this show. I'm so excited. I think it sets the tone for the podcast. And so we're just going to get right into it. And I want to understand if there was a moment that you could identify the gap in the community that needed to be filled.
I think for the founding of My House, there definitely was a moment at Burchelle High School where when I was working there, half the student population was homeless. And Diane Demoski, who was the school nurse at the time, and I were there at 7 o'clock at night, after 7 o'clock at night, trying to find this young man a place to go. And what we ended up doing, he had a car, but he didn't have anywhere to go. And the wind was blowing like 40 miles an hour, and it was like 20 below zero. It was miserable. And we ended up giving him a gas card and a sleeping bag to stay in his car. And I was horrified by that. You know, first off, his car was not the kind of car that you would think about spending the night in. It was kind of a beater with the heater. And second, I had this thought, like I grew up in this community, right? And I had this thought, what if I called all my girlfriends and said, this is my big idea, gas cards and sleeping bags. And I was just like, oh, come on. And so what came into my mind was, we have to be better than this. Really, that was the foundation of it. We have to be better than this. We have to show up better than this for the youth that we serve. I have to be better as a person. I can't just walk away from this situation and say, it's fine, because it's not fine. You know, we have to be better as a community, and we have to be better as a country at addressing these kinds of issues and helping kids feel safe. So as it happened, I went home that night and I was on the computer. I couldn't sleep, and I got up in the middle of the night. It was like 2:30 in the morning, and I was on the computer trying to find, you know, looking at like what are people doing across the country for homelessness? John Bon Jovi's Soul Kitchen. And there was a Ben and Jerry's ice cream shop in Portland that had like 8 beds upstairs for homeless youth. And so there was a variety of different things that I was looking at. But my husband got up and sat down next to me on the couch, and he said, what's going on? And I told him exactly what I just told you, that I just, you know, we sent this kid out with a sleeping bag and a gas card, and I just feel awful. And he's somewhere sleeping tonight in his car. And my husband also grew up here. And I said, I just feel like we have to be better than this. And he said, well, what do you think we should do? I said, I think we have to start a nonprofit. And he laughed because I had worked for a nonprofit before and said I would never do that again. And he looked at me and smiled and said, well, I think we should do whatever we have to do, because nobody's getting any sleep around here. Yeah. And that was sort of having his backing, you know, his support was really pivotal. But throughout the years, there have been youth that came in the door that inspired that, the commitment to stick. There have been stories that were inspirational that kept me going. And I think having a variety of places that you can step into that help you feel like what you're doing is meaningful and matters is really pivotal.
I really like what you said about, like, you really captured the moment, like the heart, like that's the name of the first episode, is the heart of, and the call too. Mm-hmm. So going into a following question, how did you get past those feelings of like, how am I qualified to do this? Or how am I singly going to make a change? Like, how did you overcome those barricades that self-doubt kind of creeps in? How did you push toward through that?
Well, I think I did three things that were really impactful. One, I started looking at models everywhere across the country. Like, clearly we don't know here in this community what we should do, or someone would have done it. The second thing I did was I started calling and talking to people that were doing this work and really asking them how they do it, why they do it, what the what the important elements are. I've spent time with directors of youth programs across the state and the nation. I visited some of those places and really tried to gather as much information as I could. But where the rubber really met the road, the third thing I did was I talked to the youth that needed services and started getting their input. And that's where it really changed. That's where I felt like my whole career had been made up of working in a youth-serving paradigm, no matter what I was doing. I finished my master's coursework and practicum in 1990 and had all of this knowledge and information, and I just started talking to kids. And that has really kept me going for 15 years. And it's part of what's made us successful. When we listen to the youth that we serve and we do what they tell us they need, we provide what they tell us they need, we are successful. We just experienced that with the 3.1 Jeff's Path program, right? Yes. They came back and said, hey, we're going to treatment programs with all these adults that are like 45, 30, 35, 45, 55 years old. I mean, we had a 22-year-old whose roommate was 42. And he came back and said, you know, sometimes it makes it seem like I don't really need to go to treatment. What do you guys think about starting your own treatment program? And I had never thought about that. And so, of course, I went and talked to Carl Soderstrom at True North Recovery because we had helped him get True North started years before. And I said, our clients are asking for this recovery program. What do you think? And he goes, well, you should do it. And so, you know, again, asking people who were doing what I wanted to do, how we should do it, taking their advice and listening to the youth for direction.
Yes, that's really good. Just being able to get that input in from the community and build on top of it and build and keep building. And there's this, you've created this environment of people that want to grow together. Like the atmosphere that you've created here at my house is so welcoming. And I just super encouraging to people for sure.
You can say we, Ramon, you're part of that.
Thank you so much. Our next question would be we go through a lot of trials and tribulations, you can say, in this field. Like we attend things that we don't really want to see. We hear stories from youth that really just breaks our heart. And how do you pour into someone else's cup and keep your cup maintained without overpouring or without overstepping or carrying your work home with you?
That is a really good question. And I think having really good boundaries is the first answer, because it's sort of layered, right? The first thing is just keeping it clear. This is what I can impact in the community and in the world, and this is what I can't. I can't own other people's stuff. And I'm real clear with my staff about, you know, we don't take credit for our clients' accomplishments. To do that would rob them of the joy of really experiencing that, like, oh my God, I did this thing, right? And so we don't take credit for their accomplishments. But we also, and the other flip side of that is, if we do take credit, then we can also be blamed, and it gives them an out for not, if they're not successful, it makes it easier for them to come back and say, well, you did such and such. So keeping those boundaries clear is really, really essential to healthy relationships, but also to helping them experience the full impact of choices, accomplishments, setbacks. And that's how we grow, right? I mean, there's a great quote. I do these quotes on Mondays. And so I'm always reading quotes and collecting them and looking at them. And there's a really great quote by Nelson Mandela that says, there is no failure. There's only learning. Mm. And so, you know, each time you have a setback, and I've used that, each time we have a setback, just saying, okay, how did this not work? What do we need to do differently the next time? What do we need to do differently right now to be able to move forward and have a success or an opportunity. More personally, I would say that my ballast or my ground wire was always my husband. And I lost him in January of last year. And so my coping had to really shift. You know, he was always the person that I talked to if something got stuck in there, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have a really great psychologist that I talk to weekly who helps me sort of unravel those things and make sure that I'm not carrying around peripheral trauma. And also helps me continue to build those coping tools. I have activities that I do. I paint. I do yoga. I have activities that are healing and that I do on a routine. I don't wait until I'm like, oh, no, I need to do something for myself. I really have it on a I do that weekly. So it gives me an outlet. And I think it's really important for everybody to have some of those things. I went to a workshop, a leadership workshop several years ago where I was there with all these other leaders and everyone in the room had something that they did for themselves and I had nothing. And the instructor of the class was like on me like stink on a monkey. It felt like he was picking me out in the class. And I didn't feel picked on, but I kind of did. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that, he said, you have until, this was in November, and he said, you have until the first of the year to find something that you do just for you. Mm. And it was like, what? And I really couldn't think of anything. And through a series of sort of coincidences, I took a painting class. Like I got down to the wire and I didn't have anything. So I was like, I'll just take this painting class. And it turned out to be something that I really love. Mm. And so, you know, thank you, God, or, you know, meant to be kind of thing. And Nancy Angelini Crawford, who's my great friend and painting instructor. But having some of those little things that bring you back to just you, with you, doing something just for you and having a focus that sort of takes you outside yourself. If I'm painting, I kind of lose track of time and it in my mind just wanders around, you know. And it lets me sort of escape from, it's a way of escaping mm-hmm. from difficult thoughts or feelings. And I come out of that feeling like I've meditated maybe, you know, for someone who's good at that. Mm-hmm. Same thing with yoga, you know, it takes you out of the space that you're in and sort of gives you a different perspective when you come back. So those are the things that I do that kind of help me to stay healthy. It isn't always just you. It isn't always just another person or a group of people. It's kind of a combination of those, but having choices and a variety that you can put into play and having someone who can really call bullshit when you start doing that self-talk that isn't mm-hmm. good, right?
Yeah, that's really, so we're going to rewind just a little bit. I really like what you had to say about when we take, kind of take a step back or we've kind of missed that mark that we've set for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We can look at it as an opportunity of growth. And that's such a huge thing as someone who is in active recovery. I have to do that many times coming into this field. I have to take that step back and identify like, okay, this isn't you messed up. This is what you always do and get into that negative headspace, but like, oh, this is actually an opportunity for me to grow and keep moving towards my passion, which is helping people. And going into another segment here, I would really like to understand, like, I would really like to talk to you about what, if there is someone who is in recovery or someone who is in treatment, who gets that tug on their heart that we talked about earlier of like, oh man, I have a desire to want to help people, but I just don't know where to start. If I'm qualified, how to get qualified, what would you say to someone that is wanting to join the cause, like join the movement of bringing the valley into a valley of hope and restoration? What would you say? How can they do their first part?
Oh, gosh, I've had this conversation with Carl Soderstrom lots of times in terms of, you know, steps, the different pathways and steps mm-hmm. that people can take. And I love the idea that we've got the peer support certifications and CDC certifications mm-hmm. that people can you know, put themselves on a pathway for that. But I would say, if you feel like you have value to others, or you have something that you want to give back, then of course you do, and follow that. I mean, there's a difference between getting up to go to work that you go to and do every day, and getting up to go to work for work that you love doing and you see value in, and that you feel like you're making a difference. And join, if you have that feeling, jump in somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people in recovery who write grants, who help with Medicaid billing, who run groups, who get training, and then their specialty is groups, peer support workers. We need all of you. We need everyone. And if you have a passion, you know, jump on board, figure out where you can plug in and be part of that movement, mm-hmm. and know that you're welcome, know that you're valued. Challenge yourself to believe that you have worth in that area. If you've done concrete work all your life, and all of a sudden you start thinking about, you know, I've got X number of years of sobriety, maybe I have something to offer here. Of course you do. And just jump in and find your niche. I think there's a tendency to feel like everyone knows what I know. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guilty of this all the time, that I go into a room and I think if I know everyone there, then the person who's with me knows everyone there. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a tendency to think, well, everyone knows that. But you know what? When you're in recovery, your journey is different than anyone else's journey. Mm-hmm. And you probably know things that could help other people that maybe no one else knows. And what I've seen here is that you gravitate toward the people that need what you have, and mm-hmm. they gravitate to you, and it becomes this sort of symbiotic relationship where the helping comes from both sides. The person who's the peer support worker has validation and worth by engaging, and the person who's in need learns and grows and understands some of the dynamics around relapse prevention, around forgiveness, around, I mean, I think forgiveness and letting go of shame are two of the most difficult things that we do in life as a whole. And having somebody to walk alongside you and just listen about that is, it's incredibly helpful. And that's a really long answer to your question, but.
No, that is perfect. I'm just in so much awe of your heart and your passion towards this community. Like, you can feel that you have that desire to bring change. Like, we have that same vision to bring hope and restoration into this town. Like, we want this to be a valley that is known for. We're not Alaska. We're not known. We don't want to be known for our suicide rates or our opioid crisis. We want to be known as a valley that brings hope. And I think that,
love that.
We have done such a great job captivating that heart and just moving with it, and we are like just running with it, and it
we're
is
on
just,
fire.
I'm glad to have that torch, like bringing that acquire the fire, holding it and just running with it.
I
and
love so, that Charlie Chaplin said, the way to change the world is not by acquiring power, it's by giving love. And love is the only real way that we change the world. People perceive that it's power, but it's love. And I really think that that there are two things that we can do to just leapfrog this whole movement forward. One is to infuse love into everything that we do and to every person mm-hmm. we meet. There's no cost to that. It doesn't cost us anything mm-hmm. to love on people. We don't need to worry about power. We don't need to control. We just need to love the people around us and love our community. I love this community. Mm-hmm. I love the people in this community. I believe that what you're describing, we can do. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an opportunity for everyone to be involved in some way. The supper club is going on out there right yes. now. Food is love, right? Mm-hmm. They're bringing food, and it conveys love to the youth that come here that are just hungry. Mm-hmm. It's a simple equation. Mm-hmm. When you get into some of the peer support topics, it's a little more complicated yeah. equation. but it's still about love, right? Absolutely. And so love one another, right?
It's so powerful. Just like this small acts of kindness, a big acts of kindness, just really are life-changing. And they bring people to that pivotal point to like, oh, wow, I've been loved on enough. I can finally love myself.
Yes.
I'm starting to see that worth. And we pull that the best out of people. And that's why I love this is when you actually see it in the youth's eyes and be like, wow, this is why I got into this business. Like that sparkle in their eye just brings so much joy.
Yes.
And you can go to sleep knowing I made a difference today.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with us today. And we, yeah, I think we are about ready to close out and I want to do an outro. So thank you so much again to Michelle Overstreet for joining us at Acquire the Fire, a burnout prevention podcast brought to you from my house. Before we sign out, I would like to talk about Inquire the Fire, which is our email that you can send questions to if you are someone who is in the field that wants to have a question brought onto the podcast for our next guest, or you just have a question of where to start. We would love to answer your questions. The description of that, well, the email will be in the description of the podcast. And I thank you so much, and we'll see you guys next week.